Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
I'm going to do something today that nobody in the American media is doing to their own shame and to their own detriment, and that is this. Every time the Hitler of Iran says the Holocaust didn't exist, instead of showing the pictures of the dead Jewish children, 6 million Jews were gassed or tortured to death or died of disease or starvation by the Nazis. 1 million of them were children. 1 million of them were children. 1 million children who did nothing to harm anyone in this world. And that son of a piece of garbage, that whore's child in Iran, that pig's child in Iran, has the nerve to deny the Holocaust. Now, we understand that he is both Haman of ancient Persia reincarnated and Hitler or one or the other. We understand that. But did you ever think you would see the day that the so-called Jewish-dominated media would let him say that without immediately showing pictures of the people in the death camps? Did you ever think the day would come that the Jews, who were so powerful in the media, were told every day, and they may be in some cases, why are there no pictures of the Holocaust? Every time Ahmadinejad says there was no Holocaust, it is the obligation and the duty of the media, Christian, Jewish, agnostic, whatever, to show pictures of the dead in the death camps. I'm doing that on my website, michaelsavage.com. I warn you, before you go on to this site, I warn you, if you are a weak person, if you're an ill person, if you're emotionally unstable, if you're a child, please don't look at the pictures. You'll never recover from them. I am doing this as a public service. I am doing what the people in the media should be doing for you. I want you to go on it. Click here to see Iran's attempt to commit another genocide while denying the Holocaust on the Jews. Go look at the pictures, and after you've looked at the pictures, you'll understand what is at stake. If this little maniac thinks he's going to get away with this, you are mistaken. I'll make a prediction for you. I'll make a prediction that this Hitler will be killed by his own people within 2 years. They understand he will wind up causing Iran to be nuked. There is no way in the world that the Jews, no matter how weak they may be today, no matter how beaten they may be today, no matter how without leadership they may be today, there's no way the Jewish state is going to let him destroy them. This is a very special day for me. It's the anniversary of my mother's passing 3 years ago. It's a very important day. And out of the blue, I got a call last night. It was another rainy night. I wasn't going to go nowhere. And a friend of mine said, would you like to come to a wedding? It's this. And I said, all right, I'm going to come. I got to get out of the house. I went to this wedding. It was a group of Jewish people, 150 people, humble people, plumbers, chauffeurs, regular people, nothing fancy. And I saw babies. I saw dozens and dozens of babies in their mother's arms. Young women in their 20s holding beautiful little babies. I went up to every baby and looked them in the eyes, and their eyes glowed looking back at me. You know how some babies won't focus? They all looked at me. And I looked at them and I said, I'm willing to die for you. I said that to myself and I said it to them. I'm willing to die for these children because if I can, I will stop another Holocaust. If I have to be the only man on earth to speak out, then I will do it. I didn't ask for this job. Nobody told me to do this. I don't know the Israeli government. I don't have anything to do with the Israeli government. But all I could think of is those young women with their little babies in their arms. And I said, this is who Ahmadinejad wants to kill? These little babies? Little Mendel he wants to kill? Little Yoshi he wants to kill? He wants to kill these little children for what reason? Because he's a sick human being who the UN, if it had any validity whatsoever, would have taken off the world stage by killing him. He would be dead by now if there was really a United Nations. There is no United Nations. Make one thing clear to yourself if you make anything clear. There is no UN. It's a group of money-grubbing, whore-mongering, useless diplomats. I am so sick of the anti-Israel, anti-American, anti-Jewish propaganda, I could scream. But I'm directing this show at the vermin in the media, particularly the liberal scum who I spit at, the Wolf Blitzer, I'd like to spit right in his eye. Wolf Blitzer is a Jew. Wolf Blitzer is an Israeli. And Wolf Blitzer will not show you the pictures of the Holocaust. That little nobody has all the power in the world to show the world what Hitler did and what Ahmadinejad wants to do again. But that little sellout is the type that would have shoveled Jewish children into an oven in order to stay alive another day. I spit at you, Wolf Blitzer. I spit at all of you. I'll put myself on the firing line if I have to. I am so disgusted by this. We hear the Holocaust didn't happen. We know the Holocaust happened. American soldiers liberated Dachau and Auschwitz and Treblinka and Bergen-Belsen. They saw the corpses in the ovens. They saw the emaciated the survivors. They know a Holocaust happened, but that generation is gone. They died off, the men who actually were witnesses to what had happened. You would think, though, the journalists would show these pictures, but the journalists won't show the pictures. Ask yourself why. The very same vermin in the media who have attacked America for the last 25 years. The very same vermin in the media who undermine the military and the police and the flag and the family will not show you the truth of the Holocaust. Why is it that the liberals are somewhat shy of showing you the pictures that I have on michaelsavage.com? And I want you to understand, I get sick when I look at these pictures. Something in me breaks when I look at these pictures. I want to die when I look at these pictures. A shrink 30 years ago warned me never to look at these pictures. I was warned to never look at these pictures because he knows what they do to me. I'm in agony right now because I like to kill somebody. That's how I feel today. If you think that this little maniac from Iran is kidding, you have another guest coming. And if you think he's not capable of wiping Israel off the map, you have another guest coming. He will bring the entire world into a nuclear exchange unless the United Nations sends a team in to take him down. I'm telling you what's liable to happen. Iran will get the nuclear bomb. Iran will launch a nuclear weapon. Israel will counter-strike, and there'll be an all-around worldwide Holocaust. And that is why this maniac must be taken out before he destroys the entire world. Now, what I want to do for you, those of you who don't know anything, because you were ignorant, you were raised to put a condom on a cucumber, you were raised to believe that there is global warming, you were raised to believe that there's homophobia and that these are the biggest problems on Earth. If those of you who have not been educated sufficiently with reality would pay a slight attention, because you're fair-minded, what I will do is present a case for you, which shouldn't have to be done, unfortunately, but I have to do it. The reason I have to do it is because of our collapsed educational system, because of our collapsed, verminous left-wing media. I have to do it for you. Please start the drum roll. Okay. That's the start of the drum roll. Here are the number of Jews killed in the Holocaust, according to every history site in the world. Poland, it had an initial population of 3.3 million Jews. 3 million were killed. Russia had a population of 3 million Jews before World War II. 1.1 million Jews were killed. Hungary had 800,000 Jews. 596,000 were killed by Hitler and his German minions. Shall I go on? I will. Whether you like it or not, I'm going to force this down your throat. If you think I'm going to waste this show giving you a meatball recipe, if you think I'm going to waste this God-given talent that I've been given and this forum on talking about a dog or on talking about something humorous because it's the holidays, I'm sorry, I can't do it for you today. Instead, I'm going to give you a dose of reality that is the best gift that God could ever give you. There is no greater gift than the gift of reality, and you're going to get it in spades today.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show. Savage. You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
Ohio, Bill, you're up on the Savage Nation.
Hey, Mike. You bring up some good points. Couple things. And what I have a little bit of trouble with is just understanding that with Iran, that they actually, that is the second largest home to Jews outside of Israel, is Iran. There are 35,000 Jews that live there in peace by choice, as do a 250,000 Christians, Assyrian Christians. Two kosher restaurants, one library, one hospital, 11 synagogues in Tehran.
So I don't understand your point.
Your point was he wants to kill every Jew in the world.
No, he said he wants to wipe Israel off the map. So let's say 3 million Jews. That's okay? Because he'll let the other 35,000 live?
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not.
Oh, I didn't know. I didn't understand. So if he lets 35,000 live as sort of show Jews in a show synagogue in Tehran, that's okay for you as long as some Jews live, then 5 or 3 million could be killed.
Well, he likens them as Sephardic Jews or true Jews, not the Ashkenazi, Russian, Turkish.
I see. So it's up to him to decide who a Jew is, just like Hitler? Would he like every Jew in the world to drop their pants?
Would I?
Yes.
No, absolutely.
Well, but you're saying that he's a reasonable man. You're starting to say that he's a reasonable man. So you also deny the Holocaust, Bill?
Well, no, I do not. I know that some horrors took place, but the Auschwitz Memorial, it was changed in 91, Mike, to 1.1 million dead, originally from 6 to 4. Now
you said some horrors took place. I see. So what, it was a mere few who died from the flu?
I think it was exaggerated. Typhoid, Mike.
Typhoid. They died from typhoid. I see. So you're denying that the Christians were killed as well?
No, absolutely not. But the Bromberg Massacre, Mike, started World War II in Germany invading Poland, where Polish Jews slaughtered 5,500 Germans, priests.
So the Jews killed themselves. They were responsible for their own Holocaust.
Well, the Danzig Corridor, the Bromberg Bloody Massacre, people can research it on the Internet. I just want...
Well, of course there are Holocaust deniers like you all over the world. Bill, why are you not in Tehran? With David Duke, your blood brother.
Mike, I'm just a historian. I have a...
No, you're not. You're a Holocaust denier like David Duke.
Not at all. But it is interesting
that... I've spent 2.5 hours reading to you. I spent 2.5 hours appealing to you. But the sickness in your soul is so deep, Bill. So you would like to see the Jews of Israel killed, the 3 million Jews annihilated, Bill?
Mike, I can't refute facts. There are 35,000 Jews in
Israel. No, but I'm asking you. So do you agree with Ahmadinejad that the Jews of Israel should be killed? That's all I need an answer on, please.
No, I do not think that the Jews should be killed. I think it's time for peace. Iraq had 14 UN violations. Israel has 70. It's the world's most. I think Israel is a...
So the UN now is your idea of a fair and balanced organization. This is the same UN that hates America is a UN that you ascribe to?
Well, Mike, it is what it is.
What do you mean it is what it is? The UN is anti-American and anti-Israel. Do you know why? We're the only ones who stand up to their evil.
To whose evil, Mike?
Don't you understand the evil of the UN? Don't you understand what I'm saying to you? Why is it that the outrage of the UN is limited to the United States and to Israel? Why is there no outrage in the UN about the slaughter of the Christian blacks in the Sudan by Arab Muslims? Can you tell me that?
Mike, they've had pagan, but they're pagans, okay? Well, you've had Hutus and Tutsis, all kinds of problems.
Wait, sir. Who's pagans? The UN in the UN, we have pagans running the UN?
Rwanda, Sierra Leone, those are Hutus and Tutsis and Rwanda killing each other.
No, it is not, sir. You're distorting history again. You see, the blind hatred that you have for the Jews has so distorted your inner eye that you're distorting the reality of the Sudan. In the Sudan, it is Arab Muslims who are slaughtering Christians in the Darfur region. Everybody knows that who's been over there and studied it, Bill. Don't make that into something it isn't as well, if you don't mind.
Correct. Although I do think it's funded, Mossad and CIA. They're behind a lot of this terror.
Have a nice trip. You know, insanity is very hard to talk to. A man once described hell as a place where there is no reason, and it was described as such for good reason, because hell is a place where there is no reason. Right now that hell is occurring not only in Bill's mind, but inside Tehran, inside the United Nations, inside the mind of the Venezuelan dictator, and, of course, inside the mind of all the leftists in America who do not understand what fire they are playing with.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show. Encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
Robert, welcome to the Savage Nation. What's on your mind?
Hey, Mike. I'm originally from a little island called Jamaica. And so I came here as an immigrant to work hard, to do my part to better myself and the general public. Your thoughts on multiculturalism are very important, because what I'm seeing happening is with Muslims coming into the country, people from Mexico, California, everyone, I think there's a force somewhere that is trying to make America less, so that with a weaker sense of identity, then the powers of the UN can move towards a one world government. I think.
Well, Robert, you got the picture. You got it as clear as a bell. It's exactly what it is. It's all part of a vast international conspiracy. By breaking down the sovereignty of strong nations with a clear national identity, they can roll us into some new world order where we become part of the UN ruled by a group of child molesters out of Belgium. That's exactly right.
You're absolutely right. And one of the things I wanted to just say while I'm on the air is, if people come to this country from Mexico, Haiti, wherever, nobody is stopping anybody from coming here. One of the things that bugs me personally is I go to the bank and I see deposit slips. You have to, they're being filled out now in English and in Spanish. I got no problem with my Spanish brothers and sisters, but I think that if I go to France and I want to get around, I got to learn to speak French.
Absolutely. When in Rome, do as the Romans do. Don't make them do as you do. We are bending over backwards to the Mexican invasion. It is illegal. It is unnecessary. It is akin to the invasion of the Moors in many ways. We are not required to become a bilingual nation. The fundamental glue of a nation, in addition to its borders, is its language, Robert.
Savage.
Over the weekend, I spoke with a number of people, and everybody has the same question to me. Can the West survive? And I said, I think that the Hitler of Iran and our enemies elsewhere, including the growing Stalin of Venezuela, Mr. Chavez, are in essence hypnotizing America and Americans. They're like snake charmers. The more they say they're going to destroy us, the more stupefied this nation seems to become.
To an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
Every generation says that they were the best generation and the children are hopeless and it's all over. I know that because I've read literature going back to ancient Rome. But I'm going to ask you something. If you go into the suburban subculture and you see white students wearing baseball caps turned backwards, or pulled over their eyes, or you see them wearing oversized T-shirts, you see them wearing baggy jeans, or shorts with dropped crotches that hang to the middle of their shin, and you see the parents go out and buy them this gangbanger outfit. They wear brightly colored shorts underneath the pants. They wear expensive name-brand high tops. Some of them wear hooded sweatshirts to ape the garbage in the ghettos. And they wear the hood during the school in order to ape the lowest common denominator. They copy the style from the street vermin, the street gangs. And that next is followed by the language of the street vermin. The language of the ghetto slime has now penetrated suburbia. So you say that the youth is not influenced by behavior. You are wrong. The cultural style for the white middle class has come directly from the ghettos. And you can look back. And you can say that in the 60s, the children of the middle class threw away the gloves, the tweed, the sheath dresses, and they put on Levi's and work shirts and peacoats to pretend that they were blue-collar workers. Remember that? They were all little communist, socialist minions, work shirts, Levi's. And they thought that they were the real Americans, although none of them actually worked. Now, today, the adolescents have done a similar thing, but instead of copying the working class, they're co-opting the gangster class as the authentic way to be, and that is to act black, as the kids will tell you themselves. They think that they're going to be scary or strong or confrontational if they dress that way. And the answer to it, I don't really know, other than to stop your children from wearing that filth. But where does the clothing come from? It's a multi-billion dollar a year industry. It is promoted by the multi-million dollar music industry. And that industry is owned by major white corporations, as you well understand. So it's a business. And the costumes of the youth, the language of the youth, is put into the minds by the $150 billion corporate dream. And there's a PBS documentary on Frontline from 2001 called Merchants of Cool. And they talk about how major corporations, Viacom, Disney, AOL, Time Warner, and others, actually study America's children just like laboratory animals in order to peddle billions of dollars in merchandise to the children by tempting, degrading, and corrupting the children. And then they write on the show like this. NYU communications professor Mark Crispin Miller wrote, when you've got a few gigantic transnational corporations, each one loaded down with debt, competing madly for as much shelf space and brain space as they can take, they're going to do whatever they think works the fastest and with the most people, which means that they will drag standards down. And of course, then you ask yourself, how far down can it go? Do you think we have hit bottom? No. And that's exactly why I support Michael Powell. We have to draw the line somewhere. Now, he discloses that there are five enormous companies today who are selling nearly all of our youth culture. They are the merchants of cool as defined by him. Rupert Murdoch's News Corp, Disney, Viacom, Universal, Vivendi, and AOL Time Warner. These big corporations, we learn, literally send spies to infiltrate young people's social settings to gather intelligence on what they can make the children buy next. He then says the entertainment companies, which are a handful of massive conglomerates that own four of the five music companies that sell 90% of the music in the U.S., these same companies also own all the film studios, all the major TV networks, all the TV stations in the 10 largest markets, according to University of Illinois communication professor Robert McChesney. They own all or part of every single commercial cable channel. So we can next go to the next step and say, how do you stop this? Well, he says they look at the teen market as part of the massive empire that they're colonizing. He says you should look at it like the British Empire or the French Empire of the 19th century. Teens, he says, are like Africa. You know that's this range that they're going to take over, and their weaponry are films, music, books, CDs, internet access, clothing, amusement parks, sports teams. That's all this weaponry they have to make money off of this market. So what is the answer? Well, the first step is imposing a form of control over the filth in language. It's a very tepid step. The next step would be to break up the media monopolies. There's no question about it. The media monopolies are responsible for this. Now, whether you broke it up and it would produce anything different, I don't know. It could get worse. So the only alternative is to appeal to the leaders of these five families and say to them, you better control yourself because the people are going to control you otherwise, and try to force them to control themselves. Because if we break up the media conglomerates and we suddenly say, well, more independents can own it, you're going to have more filth. You're going to have more filth probably rather than less.
Savage.
We're trying to get down to a cultural phenomenon of I call them crack pants. And I for the life of me, can't understand why anybody would want to deform their physique with such disgusting attire, to be frank with you. Now, I know this originated in the ghettos amongst drug dealers, as many fashions do. And then, of course, the drug addicts in the fashion business who ape the degenerates on the streets said, oh, how cool. Let's make those pants. And then, of course, the white sheeple went along and they bought the pants, and the rest is history. So now you got the cultural phenomenon of skinny white kids with pants falling down under their ugly behinds all over America. I have men emailing me saying, Mike, because of you, I'm going up to kids and saying, kid, your pants are falling down. And by the way, I have found something out. No one says it to them. They have no father. They have a liberal mother or a mother, to her credit, who works too hard to even notice. And the fathers aren't around because no father would let a son wear a pair of pants like that. And if someone says to me, kid, your pants are falling off, usually they're embarrassed. I guarantee you they'll wear normal pants the next day. You know, so I grew up, I remember when I was in junior high school, I wore pegged pants with, you know, saddle-stitched peg pants that cost a fortune. I was so, oh, my God, it was like blackboard jungle, you know? I saved up for those pants. They were so cool. You know, they were on whatever. They were beautiful, like Sal Mineo pants, okay? And I got into a schoolyard scuffle the first day I wore them because they were new, and a big kid pushed me down, and I remember ripping the pants in the knee. I was so heartbroken. I think for 10 years I never got over that. I went to a tailor, and I said, he said, I have to weave it. I didn't know what a weaving was, but I knew it was more costly than I could afford. So I do understand that boys will wear bizarre outfits during the teen years. However, it was generally sized. So if you had a 26 waist, you bought a pair of pants 26. You didn't buy a pair that was a 46 that fell down under your behind. Nobody would do that. So why would black people do that? They're fashion conscious. What is the meaning of this? I don't understand it. Maybe I don't understand black culture. Maybe you could explain it to me. So let's start in Phoenix, Arizona. Michael, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Thank you. I would like to speak on this. I'm an expert on urban culture, and I understand if you want to procreate, the phenomenon of wearing your pants too big is essential. That's in the school system. That's
Let me see if I follow you. You're saying if you want to get a girl, you got to wear pants that fall down?
Well, if you don't assimilate, you will not procreate.
What do you mean by, no, explain to me what that means. What do you mean by assimilate into what?
If you don't assimilate to the popular culture, and please don't pigeonhole all of us together, but there are some school systems.
No, but wait. But we're getting off the track. I am focused primarily on skinny white boys who are aping this style, which originated in the black ghetto. Am I correct about that or incorrect?
I think that you are incorrect about that, but it's more economics than anything else.
Oh, you mean if you pass it down from an idiotic brother who's a giant, then you can wear it? I mean, what do you mean more economic than anything else? You can't buy a pair that fits you, or you get an oversized one and you can cut it up into two? I don't understand that.
A lot of African-Americans, a lot of economic striving individuals across this world cannot afford certain pants whatsoever, certain price ranges.
I understand, but wait a minute, but can't you buy them in the correct waist size? I'm still not following the oversized part of it.
If you want to procreate.
All right, you don't know the answer, fine, but you had fun, and it's nice to hear that you're listening anyway. I'm going to take a wild guess in the dark. If you would make me guess, Michael Savage, why did that originate in the ghetto? And why do they wear oversized pants? It's to hide weapons and drugs from the police.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show. Savage. You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
The New York Times style section caught my eye because it showed women in very 50s outfits. In the style section, it said, sex doesn't sell, Miss Prim is in. I thought it was interesting because I've been saying we were saturated with the thongs, you know, since Clinton the Degenerate with the thong thing. I never liked thongs. They were unsanitary. Just looking at them, they looked unsanitary. I'd gag looking at a thong. Who would want something stuck in your behind like that? I never understood who would wear a thing like that. What sense it made. As a man, I would never wear something that was stuck in. So now I read the article. It says American designers showing their fall collections offered a hymn to decorum. I got to read this to you. It's written very well by Ruth LaFerla of the New York Times. Under the Fashion Week tents of Midtown and all around Manhattan, they turned their backs on. Listen to this. Turned their backs on the micro minis, visible thongs, low rider jeans and skin bearing tops that have so long dominated the runways and the malls in favor of high-neck dresses, prim swing coats, twin sets, and narrow knee-length skirts. This raises an inevitable question. What were they thinking? Have some brightest minds of American fashion, including Marc Jacobs, Oscar de la Renta, and others, failed to recognize that they dress a country addled by sex? It is a land where nudity enters the living room via cable television, where Super Bowl viewers are treated to glimpses of celebrities flashing bosoms, blah, 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 blah. In such a blasé climate, the latest American fashions, pert skirts and prim coats, Peter Pan collars and proper tweeds, some harking back to Mamie Eisenhower's day, are refreshing and even subversive. Yes, that's exactly true. They're actually sexier. I'm adding that. That's my editorial. They represent fashion's way of thumbing its nose at the status quo and simply moving on. Blouses with bows have never looked so avant-garde. In fashion these days, to be uptight is to be edgy, said David Wolf, the creative director of a group which forecasts fashion trends and whose clients include Walmart and Nordstrom. Mr. Wolf predicted that the trend would have staying power, that it would sell in stores, and that it was in tune with a shift in the cultural climate. In entertainment and advertising, there is a growing consensus that the consumer's appetite for blatant sexuality is abating, that to average Americans, the antics of certain celebrities, we know who they are, bearing a jeweled nipple, blah, 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 Paris Jerkoff, starring in her own sex tape, now seem as stale as day-old champagne. Everyone's gotten a little tired of in-your-face sexuality, said Cindy Gallup, the president of the New York office of Bartle Bogle and Hegarty, an advertising campaign. Now there is an appreciation of things that aren't so on. So there it is. Wait a minute. That means that I have to change my wardrobe, come to think of it. So when I wrote in my book, The Enemy Within, a chapter that begins with Dead Man's Pants, I may have to go and look and see if any of those dead man pants are still left. Does anyone have that chapter? Where do I write about Dead Man's Pants? It's a cute little story about, because we were so poor, my father would come home with the pants and tell me that they were beautiful, with hot shafter and marks, and then cut them down at the knee for me. So, women, what do you think? Do you want crinolines? Do you want blouses with bows? Are you sick of the thong, the belly button ring? I think it's easier on the women, to be frank with you, to not have to dress like, you know, the slut from E! Channel. Is it easier on you to dress in crinolines and blouses and bows? I don't know. It looks like my aunt, my deceased aunt there. I don't know if I like it or not. Now that I think. I just hope they don't bring back the fur with them little foxes with the faces, because those things scared me as a kid, to be honest with you. Now we're going way back. That's another story. Forget 50s. We're talking about my grandmother, may she rest in peace, had a fur piece with foxes on it. And she'd come in from the cold, and it was a mixture of, like, the fur was cold and perfume that gave me a migraine. I'm sure my migraine started with her perfume. God rest her soul. I don't mean any disrespect. But I would be frightened. I mean, I was a little kid up to the fox's head. It looked like a real fox. Then they'd go talk in the kitchen. I don't know, with coffee, cake, giving themselves diabetes and heart attacks, what they ate. God only knows the poison they put in their body. I would hang out in the living room, and I would get hung up on that fox's face with the little teeth. And I remember to this day rubbing my little five-year-old fingers along the teeth of the fox, the fox's face. I don't want to go back to those horrendous days.
Savage.
You know what those liberals would do to anyone reading a book like The Savage Nation of the Enemy Within in southern Florida, the land of welfare and the grifters, the old grifters? Many of them are very rich. They have plenty of money, but they rip off that state of Florida and the federal government. You try to deny them 10 cents worth of an aspirin in one of their benefits. You see if they let it go so fast. They scream right away, "Depression, I went through the Depression. How dare you raise what I paid in this country through the Depression you owe me?" No, as I said before, this is the last generation that is going to enjoy such wonderful elder care. And Southern Florida, I never saw anything like it. The whole south of the state is devoted to a few things. One of them is using drugs. The young people, they use and abuse drugs. It's like a state institution down there. The other thing is the care of the elders. And maybe that goes together. I don't know. Maybe you have to be stoned in order to not get mad at the elders. But they have wonderful care down there, really wonderful care. Everything you could imagine is free for them. And God forbid it shouldn't be. They scream. They get a lawyer. He has a practice in Great Neck, Long Island, and West Palm Beach, Florida. And God forbid the wheelchair should get stuck in a crack. And the victim doesn't get to the buffet in time, and they lose a piece of lox on the way to the line, let's say. It fell out of his hand as he was taking it out in his sleeve, you know. But we're not going to have this kind of thing ready for us when we need it, rather. Anyone, let's say, 50 or under, you're not going to have this kind of care. It's impossible to support a population like this. It's impossible. And you're telling me the skinny kids walking around, the white kids with the crack pants under their white behinds, they're going to pay for it? They can hardly take care of themselves. They don't know where to find the belt. They can't find the belt. How are they going to find the ability to make a living? It makes you wonder. I mean, am I having any impact? Sometimes I wonder. I lay in bed at night. I watch movies. I look out the window. I look at the bay. I look at the birds. Breathe the air. I take the little walk. I take the bike ride. I know the way of all flesh. I mean, I know what awaits us at the end of the road, you know. I know it's a cruel world. Everyone's greedy and out for themselves. I know larceny is the dominant value in America. I know larceny basically exists in the heart of all men, the hearts of all men. I'm cynical at a certain point. I'm hopeful but cynical. I don't know if we can save the country. I truly don't know. Because although there are fewer radical mad liberals than there are, let's say, others, they're phenomenally powerful. Wherever you look, there they are. You don't have to look too far. And forgive me for a minute. I haven't done this yet, but I have to do it. For example, if I analyze where the liberals have assaulted this country, do I have to look any further than the courts, the healthcare system, the military, the media, the faith area, the morality area, the Bible Belt versus the libel belt, as I call it, in our schools where I say condoms on cucumbers are the prevailing norm, and then the colleges, you can't believe it, and then the minds of America, how they've been warped. We have an entirely lost generation in America, far more of a lost generation than was Hemingway's lost generation. They were just lost to the social order, but they were not deviants, and they were not seditious. They were lost in the sense that they were adrift, the 20s generation, the F. Scott Fitzgeralds, the Hemingways and the others of that time when they were called the lost generation. What do you mean they were post-World War I lost? What they meant lost was so different than what I mean by the lost generation. This generation is lost completely. There may be no hope for them. And I feel so bad for these children who don't even understand what's at stake. They don't even understand that we've been attacked. They don't even understand that we have real enemies outside and inside this country. They don't understand that we could lose it all in our lifetime. They don't even understand what's at stake. And they go for the easy, feel-good solution. They don't understand what's really, really at stake here.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show. Savage. Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
You know, when you talk about the enemy within, one could draw a very good comparison to the HIV virus, where a foreign virus invades a body and literally takes over a defense cell and duplicates itself inside the defense cell and so then kills the body by destroying its ability to defend itself. It's almost identical to the Madeleine Albrights, who are now running around acting like they're our friends when in fact they're working for the enemy. So let's go to health for a minute. Of course, I talk every day about the health of a nation, but let's talk about the health of a body. Here's what Mark Twain said in Letters from the Earth. Disease, that is the main force, the diligent force, the devastating force. It attacks the infant the moment it is born. It furnishes it one malady after another, croup, measles, mumps, bowel troubles, teething pains, scarlet fever, and other childhood specialties. It chases the child into youth and furnishes it some specialties for that time of life. It chases the youth into maturity, maturity into age, and age into the grave. Mark Twain. And now I want to read you just one little entry that I wrote back in when it was published in 82 in Healing Children Naturally by yours truly on page 142 under chocolate. Now just listen to this, because many of you are chocolaholics and you've been told that chocolate's good. It contains antioxidants and I can eat more chocolate. And I can even give it to Johnny in the morning. Let's give him some cocoa. That's what good old Doc Brown told me. Pay no attention to those quacks in the nutrition field. Give Johnny anything he wants to eat, because here's this little shiny pill called Ritalin. We call it medication, not a pill. And that medication will keep Johnny real, real stable. So here's what I wrote. Chocolate comes from the cacao tree, an evergreen of the Coca-Cola family. It does not contain caffeine, but it does contain another stimulant, theobromine, which has effects quite similar to those of caffeine. When used to make cocoa, the amount of theobromine present would be comparable to the caffeine in a cup of weak coffee or tea, approximately 30 milligrams. Of course, chocolate is also a saturated fat and high in calories, and when used in cocoa, it is usually sweetened with sugar. Now listen to the following few sentences, please. Copper is also abundant in chocolate and must be avoided by hyperactive children who often have low zinc and high copper levels. For the same reasons, we in the Savage home never use cocoa or hot chocolate for our children. They may seem innocent enough, but in fact are great nutritional time bombs filled with sucrose, bleaches, copper, artificial flavorings, and excess calories. Stick to warm milk flavored with carob powder and sweetened with honey, which makes a fine bedtime drink. Now, I've given you a lot of information there. I'm sure that the oafs in the media will say, oh, Bashaw, you give that child cocoa. Never mind what anyone says. After all, I went to high school, and I know about golf. What are you? Oh, you give him meat, and you give him chocolate. You give him whatever medication that good old doctor has you give him, because those doctors have the interests of your child at heart. And they know, all of them know, what good medication is. Well, it's identical to the political situation. You're going to believe in Dr. Baker? Dr. Baker has just given you a recipe for destroying the nation. That's what old Dr. James Baker has just prescribed. He may look like the doctor of yesteryear. You know, after all, he speaks like the old, good old American doctors. Tall, good-looking, speaks with a nice southern drawl, comes from a good law firm, great family. Well, he reminds me of the doctors that used to advertise Chesterfield cigarettes in the magazines of the 1930s. Exactly the same thing. They would have doctors say that I smoke Chesterfield for health because it's good for the T-zone. They were doctors, too. Well, now we have political doctors who are just like that doctor who used to sell Chesterfield. And the case before you is good old Dr. Baker. So if I've gone a little off topic, I've gone right back to topic because that's how I do it. And that's the test of a good mind, is the ability to go far afield and come right back to the point that he's been trying to make all along. Now, I know if I keep up this health stuff, what's going to happen. I'll get a call. I'll say, Mike, I'm like that guy, that woman on the plane that had to bring matches on the plane the other day for flatulence. Mike, I asked, is there something I could take for so I don't have to take 10 books of matches on my next flight to Miami, Mike? What can I eat? What can I eat? Mike, while you're at on the thing for the matches, for the flatulence on the plane, can you give me something to make the down south part stand a little north? Point north like a compass needle, Mike. I don't want to like that Viagra stuff. It gives me a headache and I see blue. And while you're at it, Mike, I'm going to get the same thing. I don't want to do health. Please, no health cures. Maine, Susie, you're on the Savage Nation.
Hi, Dr. Savage. I just have a really quick question for you. I have a 16-year-old son. He goes to the gym 2 or 3 times a week, but he is overweight. I've decided to take him to a nutritionist, and I just want to know what your opinion is of nutritionists are they helpful? Can they make a difference?
Most of them are quacks, uneducated adults who know nothing. They have no credentials whatsoever, but they are selling you a bill of goods based on other people's work. Now, that doesn't mean there aren't an occasional nutritionist with real training and a real degree and really understand what they're talking about, but a lot of them are in it and don't really know what they're talking about. You have to look at their education. You have to look at their experience. You have to look at their certifications. Now, you may say, well, I'll go to an RD. They're even worse. The research dietitian degree is a complete reflection of the AMA principles of diet, which are totally toxic and know nothing about curing people through food. So I don't know what to recommend. Well, I do know what to recommend, actually. I would recommend that you go to a medical doctor who has a subspecialty in nutrition. That would be what I would recommend. There are some very good doctors around who have spent a lot of years studying nutrition, and that's where I would take my son. As far as weight loss, I mean, there's no mystery to it. You know, it takes self-control, and it takes controlling the diet. I don't know what you need to go to a doctor for that for. Do you?
No, actually, his medical doctor did recommend this nutritionist to him, so I think
Well, so you're working with a medical doctor who probably hasn't. But the problem is, who is the nutritionist? A lot of them are self-taught. They read 3 articles in Cosmopolitan, and suddenly they're a nutritionist. So you got to look into that. Thanks for the call. You see, I have a show that could be called How Not to Make Friends and Influence People. But you got to think about it. How did people survive for eons without nutritionists? How did people survive for eons without going to these quacks and taking a Ritalin? How did your great-grandfather survive? How did they survive the Middle Ages eating shoe leather and they were still able to read and write? How is that possible that Western civilization was built before Ritalin was discovered by the quack establishment called the pharmaceutical medical establishment? How is it possible? There must have been people who were hyperactive then. There must have been. How did they deal with it? Everybody knows people like that. They didn't need drugs. They walked a lot. They talked a lot. But they somehow got through life without having to take a drug to turn into a zombie. 1-800-449-8255. It's the parents who are behind ADHD. They're lazy and they're feeding the child junk food. 90% of the ADHD cases can be cured if the parents were educated as to how they're poisoning their child, number one, and how they're being lazy and not feeding the child properly. Much of this information is well established. It's been lost because the pharmaceutical and medical establishments want you to lose it, just as the political establishment wants you to forget history in order to manipulate you. It's the same exact thing. It's called the establishment. They control everything. Now, if you look at the control of the media by the few madmen who control it all, you'll find out, unfortunately, they also control the educational establishment through boards that they sit on. They also control the pharmaceutical establishment through boards. They sit on multiple boards. So the same power-mad lunatic who runs the media that tells you things about food that are untrue and tells you things about politics that are patently false will also be peddling you drugs that are unnecessary and peddling you diets that are clearly harmful. That's called interlocking corporate directorships. Check it out. It was once well established and well understood that interlocking corporate directorships would ultimately lead to the demise of the American. They were 100% right, and we're living through it now. I'm getting the calls right now, and I'll do them. Actually, this is fun. Beverly in Houston, Texas, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hi, Dr. Savage. I wanted to ask you a question. Number one, can we still get that book about healing children?
It's an interesting question. I had a publisher a couple of years ago wanting to reprint the book. And I told them I'd have to revise it. I didn't have the time to revise it. But now that I found the copy, I have it in my hand here. I think I'm going to spend a little time on it and revise it and put it out for the people. I'm not going to make any money on it. But I think it's so good. It is such a like an encyclopedia of great information. It should not be lost. It has a diet for prospective parents. In other words, you know that a lot of couples don't even understand that they have to think about diet while they're attempting conception. Did you know that as well?
That lady probably gave her son a donut for breakfast. I could probably
a donut probably and a cup of cocoa.
Ask you something, Dr. Savage.
Do you know that cancer is a leading cause of children's death? Did you know that? Did you know that one of the most suppressed statistics of our time is that more children under the age of 15 die of cancer, including leukemia, than of any other cause aside from accidents? Do you know why we don't hear about children dying of cancer? Do you know why we don't see children who are bald in the back rooms of hospitals? Because the AIDS racketeers have knocked up the entire sympathy racket. You are only allowed to hear about AIDS and the suffering of AIDS and relationship to AIDS and only AIDS victims and AIDS this and AIDS that. And the children are left behind dying in the back rooms of the hospitals because they don't have a voice to speak for them. That's one of the reasons I wrote this book.
What can women do for PMS? I went to a doctor. Oh, boy,
did you open up a very, very tragic subject, because there are things you can do, but I'm not about to give you medical information on this show at this time. I really only wanted to bring up this book because the ADHD came up as a break from the political discussion. But there are many things you can do for PMS. And I think, truthfully, and this is not a bad idea, if you go to one of these mega health food operations around, you know, like Whole Foods kind of thing, is there one near you?
Yes, sir. And I take a lot of vitamins and I eat salmon.
No, but listen to me. If you go there, you know, you can get an education unto itself. Now, some of it's quackery and some of it's hucksterism. But some of what you're going to read in some of those brochures is worth thinking about. I'll tell you where I'd begin today, Beverly, with anything. The Internet has become the great unifier of knowledge. Some of it's junk, but some of it's excellent. I would simply do a search on the PMS and health, and I would read as much as I could, and I would sift and I would sort, and then I would try to consult with a medical doctor, an MD, who definitely has training in nutrition. Don't just go to any old Joe Blow MD who knows nothing about nutrition. They need to have studied nutrition. They need to specialize in it along with their medical degree. And you're going to get some wonderful advice right there. But I'm not going to give any advice today on this subject.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show. Savage. You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
Now, we can move on. We don't have to stay with this. Let's see what I have for your entertainment. I don't know what else. I could tell you about my day if you like. You know, I'll get, how about a personal story, human interest story now in the middle of all of this? It's quite interesting. It'll take me 1 minute or less because there's an interesting point, and it begins with a staple cut. I had to go to the laboratory this morning for a medical test, for blood test that I've been putting off for at least 4 weeks. Every day I stared at the form. You know, and I wouldn't go. Every day I stared at it and said, I got to go tomorrow and make sure when I get up, don't eat anything, don't take anything with the blood, the lipids and the schmipids. So I put it off every day, but I made up my mind today was going to be the day. I go down the driveway in the morning in the bathrobe to get the paper. I pick it up, take it out of its blue wrapper, and I try to rip something off from the paper, and I cut my finger on a staple which said, Merry Christmas, my name is Jose. Can you please leave me a gift in this envelope? So my finger bled. I said, oh, my God, what a bad start to the day this is going to be. You know, you give the newspaper guy some money. The guy comes in the middle of the night. Why not? You throw him a $20 bill, a $50. Who knows what we give him? I don't know. We put in the envelope. I never stiff anybody. I know what it's like to be almost a slave in this country. I go to the thing. I get the butterfly, the six vials of blood that come out of me. I never felt better. I'll tell you, there may be something to bloodletting that we have to look into. I have a doctor friend who's very healthy, who's an orthomolecular physician, who bleeds himself on a regular basis. And he swears it's a very healthful thing to do. So I said, well, what's your theory about bleeding yourself? Why is it a healthful thing to do? And he said, well, for one, it removes the iron from a man's blood to a certain extent. As you well know, iron can be somewhat toxic with regard to coronary artery disease. And I said, well, what's the natural evidence that you have? He said, well, it's very simple, Michael. He said, throughout history, in primitive times, mankind had to hunt, mankind had to fight, and often he bled. And he bled small amounts of blood on a fairly regular basis, whether he was hunting in the brush and cutting himself with the brush or in a fight with an animal or a fight with another human being, he bled, and it was good for him. And now if a drop of blood comes out of our body, we scream and go to the doctor and get, Bactine on it. We spray ourselves. It's an interesting thought, just related to the newspaper, the driveway, and the staple. And I thought I would share it with you.
Savage.
Listen to this clip 17 on the Savage Nation.
Mercury is a dangerous poison still being produced by coal-burning power plants. It gets into the air, the water, and then into the fish we eat, causing brain damage in children. President Bush has taken a lot of money from the people who own those power plants, and now he wants
liar,
to...
Liar! Liar! Pants on fire!
Mercury isn't so dangerous. That means our children will go on eating mercury in their tuna, risking brain damage. Tell the EPA not to let this happen.
The EPA is the Environmental Propaganda Association of the Democrat Party, which I have proven beyond a reasonable doubt on this program. China emits 50% of the global total of mercury. U.S. emits 3%. George Bush agreed to reduce the pollution in the U.S. from 48 tons to 15 tons. Yet these mad hatters, who apparently must have eaten too much of the wrong fish, maybe this girl has been eating too much of the wrong fish. She could have been eating too much king mackerel. Maybe Karenna Gore has been eating too much swordfish. Maybe she's been eating too much shark or tilefish. Maybe she hasn't followed the Savage diet of light canned tuna or sea bass, which I had last night with a great beer and a side of spaghetti. I've eaten tuna fish my entire life for breakfast. I rarely miss a day. If I miss a day, I don't feel sharp. And if you want to feel sharp, you got to be sharp. If you want to be sharp, you got to use not Gillette Blue Blades for the quickest, slickest shave of all. But you got to eat tuna fish. You got to eat tuna for breakfast. That's a man's breakfast. Not oats like a horse. Not cereal like a child. Eat tuna for breakfast. Eat tuna like a man. Put hair on your brain.
You're listening. Savage.
Listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
Well, here we are. Let me read you the most egregious email I've received all week, sent today to Michael Savage regarding sage advice. And here is exactly what it says. One, it is important to find a woman who cooks and cleans. Two, it is important to find a woman who makes good money. Three, it is important to find a woman who likes to have sex. Four, it is important that these three women never meet. Thank you, Tom. I appreciate the sage advice. This is the sexiest, the most sexist email of the week. Now, here's what's really on my mind. Why are so many sons of the rich failures? Shall I repeat the question? Why do you think so many sons of the rich are failures? They're either drug addicts, they're in rehab. They've never done anything with their lives. Why? Why? Do you have an answer to that one? I have my own opinion. But first, let's go to Chris in Honolulu, who lost a friend who came from a rich background. Hello, Chris. Welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hi, Michael. Yes, my friend, by the way, was a graduate from Berkeley, University of Berkeley, English Literature.
Right there, it was the road to perdition.
Yeah, he was being groomed for a liberal media journalist job or something along those lines. The one thing I would say is we've had many, many discussions, long-hour discussions about how come he found it so hard to cope with life. And I come from a terrible childhood, and I it made me stronger to more of a survivor instead.
But wait a minute, but there's your answer right there. That's exactly the truth. You know how many times I've thought about this when you think about I got to relate to this, Chris. I was raised in a pretty tough manner. I'll be honest with you. I'm not going to go into details. I was raised in a very, very tough manner, looking back on it. It was very severe. Now, when it used to get me crazy, long after my father was dead, there were times I hated him. I'll be honest with you. Until one day I stopped hating when I realized something. You know what that was, Chris? In his mind, he was doing it to make me a better person. He was afraid I'd wind up soft and weak and go down the tubes in America. That's what he was afraid of. He was an immigrant. And he used to say it over and over again that I'd wind up ruined, you got no character. What he was doing in his own mind was putting that irritant inside the oyster of his son to create the pearl of my character.
Well, I can agree with that, and I would say that his family gave him everything he wanted, so there wasn't a struggle. Everything came too easy. He didn't appreciate what he had received.
Well, wait a minute. Well, why would that make someone a junkie? I can't understand the connection.
Life was too difficult to face. As soon as he graduated from the university, he had to face the fact of getting a job, and it was no longer, living on the dole while going to school. It was now suddenly the
wait a minute. Couldn't he go back to the family manse and just hang out and pretend he was working for the family corporation or something? Why did he have to get a job?
Well, it was the father wanted to see he as you mentioned earlier, there's another family that one was successful, the other wasn't. In his family, there were the other siblings. There, it was almost like there were four siblings, and two were successful and two weren't. And the two that weren't went down exactly the same road of self-abuse and destruction. And I tried my best to get him to see the value in life without.
But wait, the question though, missing the question. Why do you think the sons of so many rich are failures? Give me in one sentence or less your opinion on your friend.
Because they're not prepared for the realities that they have to face on their own. When they leave home, they're it's like the bird is pushed out of the nest, but it wasn't given the abilities or the skills necessary.
Interesting. Well, great. Grounded analogy, Chris. Thanks for that call. And don't take it as a personal failure of your own. I hear a lot of pain in your voice. I don't want to start sounding like Dr. Laura, but This fellow who just called from Honolulu is full of pain over his friend's death, and that's certainly understandable, but don't blame yourself. You couldn't stop the decline. But I heard those very words from my father. And he used to tell me, you're going to have to leave the nest one day and you got to learn how to fly. Tough. You got to toughen up. I got to make you tougher. You got to have character. You got to be strong. You got to have willpower. Over. I mean, it was drilled into me from the time I was could even think. And he didn't want me to be pushed around. The worst thing to him that could happen to a son was to be a kind of guy who was pushed around by other people. The absolute worst thing that my father thought could happen to his son was not to be a financial, let's say, mediocrity. That didn't matter to him. That was not, in the way I was raised, that wasn't the goal. He wasn't to be the richest guy in town. It was to have, I guess, honor, you would call it. You see, these were old world kind of values. And he, in other words, you had to maintain your honor at all costs. You didn't let anyone dump on you. You didn't let anyone put you down. You didn't let anyone push you around. There were words for it that I don't have to repeat. And to this day, I am formed by that. I don't like people getting over on me. I don't care who it is. I have a very hot temper, and I take offense very easily, and I frankly have to fight with this every day in myself. I have to conquer this in myself. I want you to understand what I'm saying. To this day, it's a challenge for me to ignore the slings and arrows of absurdity that mean nothing. The slight of a waiter, the insult of a person on a highway, the things that might trigger anger in another person. You might call it anger management, but I've learned to have to manage my own anger. It's not easy for anybody who has been trained not to yield to the next person. But what I learned is you have to save it for what's important. You know, don't let a little thing trigger. You'll wind up a madman. And there's another way around it, which is never leave the house. That way you don't have to face it. Don't leave the house at all and nothing will bother you. Then you don't have to waste your time on the little adjustments. But why do the rich produce sons that screw up so often? I have my own theories. Let me give you an example. First of all, I was not rich, so I wouldn't know what went wrong in a rich home. But I do know this. I wasn't poor. I worked. I always made a living. But I instilled in both of my children they had to work from the earliest age, just as I was taught to work. I made them work. I forced them to work. I forced them to learn the value of a dollar. Now, I went back to my childhood, and I thought about something. I grew up in a sort of middle-class, lower-middle-class neighborhood in Queens, New York. That's after we left the tenement of the Bronx, the tenements of the Bronx. We moved to a suburb of Queens. You know, lawns, houses, fences. It was a miracle to me. I had no idea that people lived that way. I thought it was only in a magazine after, you know, coming from an apartment house. Now, naturally amongst our families, some fathers got real rich fast. I mean rich, not like Rockefeller. But compared to the rest of us, they made a lot of money in the post-war years, and they could have moved up yet another rung or two. And out of that, let's say, middling middle-class neighborhood to an upper-middle-class or a rich neighborhood. But some of the fathers chose to stay there, even though they were making a fortune in manufacturing or whatever, and they stayed amongst our type, and it was for their sons and their daughters so that the kids would learn to respect work and respect the value of money by being around kids, in other words, who were still being told, don't throw your money away. You know, how much does that cost? What do you want the money for? Did you earn it today? Because the value system, in other words, was intact in the neighborhood. Some of the fathers who made a lot of money didn't leave the neighborhood. They kept their sons and daughters there. And they did that specifically so the kids didn't get ruined. And I thought that was very interesting looking back. At the time, I didn't know what they were doing. Gary says he's a rich kid who blew it all. Gary, you're on the Savage Nation.
That's right. 22 years old, and my father dropped dead in 76. And was smart enough to make us kids wait till we were 35, which was 1989 for me, to get the principal of our trust account. And I promptly blew $250,000 within 2 years on marijuana, cocaine, women, traveling, and not working. And I was down and out. And I decided one day that was it, when I was thinking about killing myself. And I went to a temporary work agency in 1990, and here I am today with a beautiful wife. We've been married 8 years, and I'm making close to $100,000 a year. I went back to school, and I never took a dime of any taxpayers' money in any kind of welfare or food stamps or anything.
Gary, two questions. Two questions. One, did you enjoy the two years that you spent the 250? Was it fun?
Pardon me?
Did you have fun when you blew the 250?
It was really something. Very impressive to all my rich friends that I grew up around, and we were just all having fun at my expense. And I...
Wait. What do you mean? They were rich, but they were spending your money?
You betcha. I was just buddies with everybody, and I became a pariah in my family, and I am very proud to say that I've gotten back with my family and attended my niece's graduation.
In other words, you were the good time, Charlie. They all slapped you on the back, and you were the one who bought the drinks, in essence.
They knew where to get the drugs, and we traveled, Thailand, the whole works, the whores, you name it. And I was just everybody's buddy.
So, Gary, you went to Phuket in what, 1983?
89 went to
Phuket. 89. Oh, you went to Phuket before it was relatively dangerous.
Yeah, this is when it was just a Navy town. That's correct, Michael.
Gary, I can't help it. You know, my mind goes all over the map. You know, I'm thinking about having all that money and having so much fun, but you blew it all, huh? And now you brought yourself back on your own.
I blew every dime of it, mostly on cocaine, and never thought I'd have to work another day. And even when it was running out, I said to heck with it. And then I just was down and out and was lucky to have a couple of friends left that I cared to be around. And here I am.
Isn't that... Gary, thanks for calling. See, this is the interesting thing about talk radio that people not in the business will never understand. It is still the most powerful medium for suggestive input into people's minds. They really do. Who would listen to talk radio but people who have a brain that operates? I want you to think about what I just said. This is not a passive medium. Talk radio is an active medium. You have to turn your mind on. You have to listen. You have to use your own mind to evaluate what the talker is saying. You have to quickly decide, does he know what he's talking about? Okay, he does. Do I agree with him or I don't? Why? You have to think. You don't have to do that with a medium like television or the movies. They're made for something else. And I guess that's why I'm good at it. I love thought-provoking questions, and I love callers who provoke me into further thinking or further development of ideas. That's all. Give me fuel, give me fire, give me that which I
desire. You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show. You're listening to an encore broadcast of the Michael Savage Show.
You know, it's hard to raise a dog as a child in the beginning. It's actually harder because a child is easier than a dog in the beginning. Then as they get older, it's another story. Then they become, liberals until they're around 30. At least the dog doesn't have any political opinion. You could just throw it some food. But a child is horrible what they become. Look at those rich kids. Look what happens. Totally useless idiots inheriting billions of dollars like that. The big deal. The whole thing in life is jumping over with a horse. You know, the more I think about it, the angrier I get, the more oriented I become toward the left on this issue alone. It eats my guts out. Don't get me wrong here. I'm not arguing for communism. But when I see the children of the very rich, the inheritors of these massive fortunes that, let's say, five generations, four, three, two ago, they never worked. Their father never worked. Their grandfather never worked. The children are absolute useless idiots, not useful idiots, as Lenin would say. The useful idiots vote for the Democrat Party. It's heartbreaking to think most of them are going to wind up giving the money to liberal causes. That's what really eats me up. I want to talk about that for another minute. I was thinking about it again, what bothered me about that thing on HBO done by the Johnson & Johnson heir. It was a thing about rich kids. Bloomberg's daughter was there, and she's boasting about how she can – her horses. That's her whole claim to fame, is that she has five horses, Nina, Pinta, and the Santa Maria, and they jump. And I'm saying, oh, how pathetic. And the other jerks are doing fencing. They think they're in 17th century France to show they're classy. I got another guest coming for them. I knew kids who were immigrant sons who could outfence them at Queens College, incidentally. You know, they think that they're sophisticated because they fence. Why don't they do something useful with their lives? That was the point I was trying to make. Go back a few generations in England, for example. You talk about inherited wealth, old money. The children of the rich in England all enlisted in the Air Force, by and large, in World War II. Some of the bravest men in England died in World War II because, what, they had 20 hours of flying. They went up against the Luftwaffe, you know, that great British attitude at that time. That's what you call noblesse oblige. That's what you call an aristocratic spirit. Now, what is missing in these children that I saw in that HBO special? Not one of them mentioned America. I finally dawned on me what was bothering me about them. It's not their money. I don't care about the money because I'm not a communist. I care about the lack of patriotism. Not one of those snot-nosed, useless idiots that I saw on the HBO special said a damn thing about this country, which gave them their fortune. Not one of them said, I'm going to devote myself in some way to bettering America by defending her borders, language, and culture, even if it is only with my money. This is a product of the lack of education in America today, from the rich to the poor. And that's what worries me about the future. That's all.
Savage.
I read an interesting story in a boating magazine on the way home that has a lot to teach us. It's about a man who owned a mega yacht, like 134 feet. This is a mega yacht, a certifiable mega yacht. One of the, you know, the great, beautiful boats of the world. So the crew was delivering it from Fort Lauderdale to somewhere in the Caribbean. I don't know where. What happened was, is a lot of these mega yachts have been designed recently to have stern doors, you know, in the back of the boat. For those of you who don't have boats, these are big boats. And the back lifts up and out come, oh, various water toys, you know, like speed boats, ski-doos. Some of them even have submarines that come out of the back. The problem is some of these doors are not waterproof, or watertight, rather. They're waterproof. You know, like the raincoat you bought, let's say, at Brooks Brothers when you were 18, and the man said to you it's water-resistant, and you went out in the rain and got soaked down to your shirt, and you came back in fuming, and you said, but you said the raincoat was waterproof. And he looked at you and said, no, I said it's water-resistant. Now, I had that happen to me when I was 17. So I learned the difference between water-resistant and waterproof very young as a result of a raincoat I bought in Brooks Brothers when I was trying to be, a business type in New York. Well, look like a business type when I was a humble welfare worker. I worked in the welfare department then as a teacher. But the fact of the matter is, so the crew goes out in this big mega yacht, which you think is unsinkable, and this boat sinks. The doors pop open. The seas break through the back. The water comes rushing in. Next, the waterproof barrier in the boat, the watertight compartment, breaks, or the crew had left the door open. The boat floods. Now, it doesn't go down right away, but there's so much water sloshing around inside the boat, going up the three stories of staircases. It's destroying the silk wallpaper. It's destroying the silk sheets. It's destroying the art on the walls. And the boat is now suddenly unstable. Then the pumps fail on the boat at the same time. It's like the perfect storm all over again. Well, the moral of the story is that none of us are as secure as we think we are. And although we think that, let's say many people who are wealthy in particular, think that they're immune from any kind of occurrence like this, that it can't happen to them. They're above it all. They think that they're above it all and it could never affect them. The fact of the matter is there's a lesson in this story for all of us. And that boat is very much like America as far as I'm concerned. That ship I am describing to you with doors on the rear that opened for the toys to come out and instead became flooded with seas that entered are very much like this country. And I'm terrified that the captain that we have, the crew that we have running the good ship America, are about as incompetent as the crew that ran that ship. And eventually they had to be lifted off that ship by helicopter. And the helicopter, the Coast Guard helicopter crew, by the way, were real heroes. I'll read you the whole story in a few minutes when I go dig it up out of my travel bag. But you get the picture. You know, a ship, no matter how good it is only as good as its captain and its crew. Likewise, a nation. A nation is only ultimately, no matter how great that nation is, it is only as good as its president and its leadership. And I'm not that happy with the leadership nor with the president. Do you understand what I'm saying to you? I guess not.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
Now, let's talk about how the children are being exploited on another level. The merchants of filth, the major corporations have, as you well know, sold them the music and the clothing. But do you also know that the merchants of filth sit on the same boards that control the pharmaceutical industry? The same interlocking corporate boards of directors, they play hopscotch. First, they sell your child on gangster rap. Then they sell you on the big lie that there's a thing called ADD or OCD, and they peddle them drugs. And you think that this is all happening by accident. How was it that for thousands of years nobody had OCD? For thousands of years nobody had ADD? The answer is because it didn't exist then and it doesn't exist now. It is a category created by the drug companies to peddle drugs. The USA Today. Does your child have OCD? Take the quiz. And I looked at it with astonishment. What is OCD? According to the quacks, known as pediatricians, OCD is obsessive compulsive disorder. Question. Is he troubled by excessive worries, particularly about dirt, germs, or other dangers? Now notice, is it he? Here we have, let's stop right here. We have feminists who've tried to resexualize or regenderize every statement written on every test into is she? But when it comes to a disease, notice every question is he, not is she. Does he repeat the same questions over and over again or constantly seek reassurance? That's OCD. That's not just a kid who needs reassurance. Does he seem to have difficulty concentrating? Is he washing his hands excessively or taking extra showers or changing his clothes more frequently? Do you understand how sick this questionnaire is? Do you realize that the drug peddlers are sick themselves to even write this? Next question. Does he check repeatedly, reread or rewrite homework assignments? To me, that would be the mark of a good student. Six, does he have to repeat things a certain number of times or until they are just right? That's the mark of a literate child who's trying to pronounce things correctly. Seven, does he arrange things in a certain order or become upset if something is misplaced? That's the mark of a neat person. Do you understand the brainwashing here? Do you understand these pediatricians ought to be locked up for being lower than the drug dealers in the lowest ghetto in America? Eight, do the symptoms bother your child, make him anxious or upset? Nine, do the worries or behaviors get in your child's way, interfering with his activities? What activities? Watching MTV? Learning about homosexual lifestyles? Putting condoms on cucumbers? Don't you understand what's going on in this country? Red flags. Experts can help parents decide whether a child's repeated hand washing is a sign of OCD. I rest my case. There is no such thing as OCD. It's another false category created by the drug peddlers in order to turn your child into a consumer of drugs. Often medications can help. A recent study by researchers at Duke University found that a combination of behavioral therapy and anxiety-reducing drugs is more effective than either approach. So in other words, if you put them on these drugs, they will no longer arrange their shoes under their bed. They will no longer check their homework. They will no longer repeat things to make sure they got it right. They will never ask the same question twice, even though it's not clear to them. And they will never worry again and possibly never take another shower. In other words, they'll be a perfect little liberal. So there it is. What can I say to you? There's the whole story in a nutshell. The corporates, the corporations, the interlocking corporate directorships, you check them out. The drug companies, the same guys who sit on the boards of the drug companies, sit on the companies that own Viacom, that sit on the Time Life, that sit on Disney, that sit on this and sit on that. They bounce around in their airplanes and they don't give a damn about the children. They're nothing but Africans to colonists of the last century. That's how they look upon them. How can they peddle more filth? How can they peddle more drugs? How can they peddle more jewelry? How can they peddle more sneakers? How can they peddle more CDs? How can they peddle more anxiety? By turning them into little robots. Millions upon millions of our children are in their grip. But the corporate aspect is simply the tip of the iceberg. According to this article, he writes, behind both the corporate manipulators and the youths caught in their selfish and shameful influence lurks another much more formidable and all-pervasive marketing campaign, a malevolent dimension that has no one's best interests at heart and which is programmed to devour all in its path from the highest to the lowest. That something is literally intent on degrading this generation so totally that little hope would be left for the next generations of Americans. This is a fabulous article I'm quoting from by David Kopelian, Selling Sex and Corruption to Your Kids. It appeared on WorldNet Daily. I also posted it on michaelsavage.com. It's unbelievably clear. It starts with him watching his 12-year-old son as a Boy Scout reciting the Scout Law. A Scout is trustworthy, loyal, helpful, friendly, courteous, and kind. And you understand today the forces that are trying to destroy the Boy Scouts. You may think that it has only got to do with a sexual orientation. You are mistaken. The reason the judges and the municipalities have turned against the Scouts is that they can make your son or your daughter immune to the filth and the merchants of evil by teaching them morality without peddling them a product. By teaching your children to have a moral core without selling them accoutrements to attain that morality, they are making them immune to the products of these corporations. Those are my words, by the way.
Savage.
Let's see. I didn't get to these stories. Young children who watch TV may face risk of attention problems. That's the way they put it out. My headline reads a little differently. My headline is this. It's a little more clear. It says, TV causes ADD. The soundbite nation. No wonder your child's a moron who doesn't know what's going on. Click, 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 click. Go get him to study what an atom is, what a nucleus is. It's too hard. I want to go on to the next channel, mommy. Can I have my cherry vanilla yogurt? Give him Ritalin. Then when he outgrows Ritalin, put him on Prozac. And then send him off to college where he can buy crack cocaine on his own. And that way you'll know he's grown up. He no longer needs the mommy state. No, he can go out to the ghetto himself and buy that crack cocaine. It's a sign of manhood in America. Ritalin in childhood, Prozac in the early adolescence, and send them out into the streets ripe and ready. And then, of course, after they go through the cocaine phase or the crank phase, send them to rehab as a young adult. It's the equivalent of a job in my generation. My generation, the people in their 20s went and got a job. Today, they go to rehab. Compliments of the daddies and mommies. Larry Seltzer, you know him as Larry King. When is this guy ever going to, when is he going to ever get off the air? It's like a corpse with suspenders. He has the Osbournes on. I have a very important announcement to make. My other child's in rehab. Really? No kidding, huh? So you got another one, a junkie, huh? How'd that happen? Couldn't be related to your lifestyle, could it, huh? World-breaking news. Americans are hanging from a bridge in Fallujah. He's interviewing a degenerate junkie whose child became a degenerate junkie. Instead of interviewing a rocket scientist whose son became a rocket scientist, or a talk show host whose son has become a major producer of something great in America. So, your son became a junkie, huh? Your daughter, too. Congratulations. Welcome to the liberal establishment. Ooh. Young children who watch TV may face risk of attention problem. No kidding. It may overstimulate the brain. Throw the TV down the stairs like I did when they were kids. They told me, they reminded me, they're grown up now, but they reminded me when I came home, I used to run up the steps from the back so they wouldn't know I was coming home. And I would touch the TV to see if it was if it was hot. They said that they knew I didn't want them to watch TV when I was in there before I came home. And they would make believe they were doing their homework after they turned it to, hey, Dad's coming. Then they'd get like fake studious, and I touch the back of the TV to see if it was hot. Once I threw it down the steps, I remember to this day, very nice role model. Sizzle, you know, they really blow up nice when you throw them. They blow up real nice. Sizzle, crack, snapple, and pop. like The Wires came out. That didn't last too long because then I couldn't watch TV at night after they went to sleep, so I had to get it back. Now I'm hopelessly addicted. But I'm past the age of ADD. Secondly, I'm in a profession where ADD is an advantage. And thirdly, since I have two bestsellers and I wrote 18 previous books and I earned a PhD from Berkeley and two master's degrees and did a lot of other stuff that takes a lot of attention, and real attention, I figure who cares if they think I have ADD. Outsourcing, I don't care about. I'm not into it. They can't outsource talk radio. Nobody in Madras could do my job. Hello, it's a Savage Nation. They can't. They couldn't even fake it with a computer. They could do it with some other talk show host. They can get a person who could imitate their voice. But luckily, I kept my New York brogue long enough to know that nobody in India could imitate me for half the price, quarter the price. They couldn't do it at all. They could never outsource the Savage Nation. Hello, you've reached Madras, the Savage Nation. Never. Could never happen. And, you know, I love Indian people. They know it. They love my show. I never like Indian. They're very nice people. I never met an Indian I didn't like. I'm very serious about that. How come they come over here and in one generation they win spelling bees? Other ethnic groups come here. 10 generations later, they're still living off Uncle Sam. Why is that? I think it's called brains, family pressure, something like that. And how about a several thousand-year-old culture that prizes learning?
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
Savage.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
I should have been on an airplane to Miami today. I didn't go. I had the tickets, the hotel, the bag was sitting there waiting to be packed. Today I was going to fly to Miami. Right now it's like 2.5 more hours of the flight, an hour and almost 2 hours, get in Miami, take the day off, then broadcast from WFTL down in Fort Lauderdale tomorrow, Thursday and Friday. I would, you know, that. But I didn't go. I am so agitated from the news that I just didn't want to go to Florida on a so-called vacation. I don't like vacations. Let me reiterate why I don't like vacations, and I want you to analyze whether you think there's something wrong with me or you think I'm probably the sanest person you've ever heard. Do you realize how brainwashed you are into thinking that you must travel to be happy, that you must go on a vacation to vacate? Think of what the word vacation means, vacate. Now, why can't I stay around my own territory like the lone wolf that I am and vacate right here? After all, here I have my house. Now, what's in my house that I love? Everything. What feedback do I get in my own house that I can't get in the nicest hotel on earth? Let's put aside the obvious, you know, the sheets, the bed, the pillow, the air. That's number one. I don't care what hotel I've been in, I cannot sleep. I thrash all night in the best hotels on earth. I can't sleep in them. No matter what. Okay, so you've heard that before. It's not even funny anymore. So that's a given. But put that aside. Let's forget sleeping. If I walk around my house, I have books that I've had for 30 years. In certain places, like in certain areas, I have libraries in various rooms, right? So I don't have to pull the book out of that bookcase. I walk by it. My eye sweeps it. My inner mind takes it in. That gives me a sense of stability. I have bronze statues, a few of them, that I bought ever since I'm a little boy working in my dad's store. When I see these statues, I don't know what I'm reminded of, but I get a feedback of my whole life. What do you want me to say? The tile on the floor, the rugs on the floor, the dogs, the refrigerator, the stove, the toilet, the garden, the kind of birds that come down in the rain that visit us in the winter that I love to look out of the kitchen window while having a cup of coffee. And I look at the birds sitting on the trees. Like this morning, I have a certain hedge. And this time of year, the hummingbirds come down and they feed on a little flower. Or then on the other side of my house, I have apple trees. Now, obviously, the apples are all fallen, and the tree is denuded of leaves. But some apples have remained on the twigs, and they're rotting. But a certain flock of birds comes every day to feed on these rotting apples. They're smart enough to scent the apples. It's great food for them. There's probably a lot of larvae and bugs in the apples, and they know when to come for them. And I stand on my little balcony, and I again drink a cup of tea, and I muse over that while the mist falls on my face. How in the world can I match that anywhere on earth? That's the question I've asked myself. Now, I want to just finish this up in a minute. and we could talk about why I don't go on vacation. And I'm not. I know this is terrible for you because most of you love vacations. And okay, when I was younger, I did it, but I don't remember one trip I've ever taken in my entire life that I didn't come back from. I'm looking back on my whole life where I didn't say I'm never going away again. I never want to travel again. I don't remember one trip that I came back from where I said, "Whoa, that was terrific. I can't wait to go there again." All the years I killed myself going to the Fiji, Samoa, Tonga, the Marquesas to collect plants, I didn't love it. I had a fight with myself to get on those planes and spend weeks alone in those rainforests and those villages. Anyway, I'd rather talk about that. That's it. I'm never going to go on a vacation again, or very seldom will I ever go. I don't enjoy it. Now, if I had a house, let's say, in a tropical setting that I would go to, that's another story. But I don't right now have one, and I don't want to buy one. I don't want to maintain another property anywhere ever again. I don't want to maintain anything ever anywhere. It's too much. Jerry on WOR, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hey, Dr. Savage, just want to tell you, I totally agree with you. You know, when I take off for vacation, it's just, there's no place I'd rather be than my house or, you know, like at my in-law's shore house about 50 miles away. But
when you go on vacation, don't you feel obligated to go on a vacation? You don't really want to go?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I just want to be with my wife and kids and hang out at home and just relax. I mean, you know, I'll do little things with them here and there, like I said, at the beach, but I don't want to go overseas with them, and it's just, you don't relax.
Let's say you go to the southern, you know, to Florida, whatever, in the winter from New York. So even if you got another room for the children, I don't know how old they are. Let's say you and your wife are in one and they're in another. Then you're worried about them all the time, and then you got to entertain the children all the time. And let me tell you something else, Jerry. How old are your kids?
5, 3, and 9 months. All girls.
All right, they're babies. Wait till your children are 12 to 14 and they are still traveling with you because you cannot leave them at home. You will be sitting at dinner with them, and what you have is the equivalent of having taken an adult couple on vacation. You're paying all the bills. They don't talk to you. They're hostile all of the time, and you don't enjoy one second of it, and they don't either. But it's like an enforced vacation. The kids don't want to be there, and you're forced paying their tab. And you don't want them to be there. They don't enjoy themselves. They want to go to, like, silly things with you. Anyway, I'm against vacations. If you like it, fine. I can vacate in my own living room better than anywhere.
Listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
Robert, welcome to the Savage Nation. What's on your mind?
Hey, Mike. I'm originally from a little island called Jamaica. And so I came here as an immigrant to work hard to do my part to better myself and the general public. Your thoughts on multiculturalism are very important because what I'm seeing happening is with Muslims coming into the country, people from Mexico, California, everyone, I think there's a force somewhere that is trying to make America less so that with a weaker sense of identity, then the powers of the UN can move towards a one-world government. I think.
Well, Robert, you got the picture. You got it as clear as a bell. It's exactly what it is. It's all part of a vast international conspiracy. By breaking down the sovereignty of strong nations with a clear national identity, they can roll us into some new world order where we become part of the UN ruled by a group of child molesters out of Belgium. That's exactly right.
You're absolutely right. And one of the things I wanted to just say while I'm on the air is, if people come to this country from Mexico, Haiti, wherever, nobody is stopping anybody from coming here. One of the things that bugs me personally is I go to the bank and I see deposit slips. They're being filled out now in English and in Spanish. I got no problem with my Spanish brothers and sisters, but I think that if I go to France and I want to get around, I got to learn to speak French.
Absolutely. When in Rome, do as the Romans do. Don't make them do as you do. We are bending over backwards to the Mexican invasion. It is illegal. It is unnecessary. It is akin to the invasion of the Moors in many ways. We are not required to become a bilingual nation. The fundamental glue of a nation, in addition to its borders, is its language, Robert.
Savage.
Over the weekend, I spoke with a number of people, and everybody has the same question to me. Can the West survive? And I said, I think that the Hitler of Iran and our enemies elsewhere, including the growing Stalin of Venezuela, Mr. Chavez, are in essence hypnotizing America and Americans. They're like snake charmers. The more they say they're going to destroy us, the more stupefied this nation seems to become. It seems to me that we are a stupefied nation unable to act. We have a crippled president. We have a corrupt incoming Democrat regime, more corrupt than the Republicans could ever dream of being, because after all, they are Democrats and they are the party of corruption. It doesn't get any better than Alcee Hastings, an impeached judge, being recommended for the position of the head of the Intelligence Committee. It doesn't get any better, Nancy. You're really doing great on that one. That should really solidify your legacy. Go for a twofer on that one. An impeached judge, a guy who sold his judgeship to mobsters, rulings for mobsters, was thrown out of his judgeship. This is who she's picking to head up the Intelligence Committee? Do you have any idea what this is? So it leads me to ask the question, does the West have a death wish? I have to ask myself, does the West have a death wish? But I want to answer the same question, or approach this question a little slower from another side. A correspondent in Jerusalem asked me about Israel. He's over there, and he writes about the Jewish state. Now, he asked me what I think about Israel, meaning when I say what I think about Israel, meaning what do I think is going on in Israel? Well, all you have to do is turn to michaelsavage.com, and you'll see one of my running headlines is very short and sweet. It says, Palestinians take advantage of Israel's death wish. Palestinians take advantage of Israel's death wish. The head of Israel, Olmert, is exactly like a Holocaust Jew trying to negotiate with the Nazis when he's got one foot in the death camp door. And so I wrote to him in Jerusalem, and I said, I believe Olmert and his kind will be the death of the Jewish state. He is acting like a Holocaust Jew, not like a Sabra. Why he takes orders from a failed Bush team is incomprehensible. They have mismanaged the pacification of Iraq for precisely the same reasons Israel is being outmaneuvered. Too little force, coupled with faith in a peace process that only results in more human pieces. The Muslim is on the warpath again after centuries of dormancy. They smell weakness in the West and are attacking on several fronts at once. Outright war, immigration, propaganda, i.e. the liberal media and the liberal courts. Let me repeat that. The Islamists smell weakness in the West and are attacking us on several fronts at once. One, through outright war. Two, through immigration. Three, through their propaganda disseminated through the liberal media. And four, through the liberal courts. Only a devastating military blow against the hearts of Islamic terror, coupled with an outright ban on Muslim immigration, laws making the dissemination of enemy propaganda illegal, and the uncoupling of the liberal ACLU can save the United States. I would also make the construction of mosques illegal in America and the speaking of English only in the streets of the United States the law. You can quote me on the above if it is of any use, Michael Savage. Now, I read that to you because I truly believe that is a prescription for survival. And I understand that the psycho-liberals from hell, the RDDBs, the red-diaper-dopa babies, will quote me and misquote me and call me every name under the sun, which is perfectly fine by me. I understand they are dancing around the goddess of death, but they're not going to make me dance around that goddess of death, no matter what names they may call me. Give me fuel, give me fire, give me that which I desire.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show. You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
I don't know where you're going to turn when and if something terrible happens? Are you going to wake up and say George Bush caused all of this? Is that the liberal response? If, God forbid, something horrible happens in this country, something worse than 9/11, you're going to blame the Republicans, Bush, heterosexuals, white people, Christianity, Jews? Who are you going to blame? Well, you'll blame anybody but yourself. The American left doesn't even understand that it is the reason. It is the chief reason that Islam is at war with the West. And what's really amazing to me is that the people who have the most at stake in the battle against Islamism and the most to lose if Islamism wins, you, the progressives, so-called, you're the least able to fight it, the least willing to fight it. You're the ones who hate the Pentagon. You're the ones who hate the White House. You're the ones who hate the state capitol, the national capitol. You're the ones who hate Israel. And yet the F-16s that fly overhead are there to protect you from the Islamists who would cut your throat and throw you down a well. The very values of the West, 40 years of civil rights, gay rights, feminism, reproductive choice, that's abortion, sexual madness called freedom, the right not to worship if you don't want to worship. In other words, the Marxist left's wild dream is protected by the very elements that you hate in this country. You, the sexually unorthodox. You, the bohemian. You, the poet. You, the professor. You are protected by those F-16s. You are protected by the boys who go to church and went to church every Sunday. You are protected by the rock rib conservatives in this country who fly over your head, who are dying in Iraq for your sins. Civil rights, gay rights, privacy rights, abortion, sexual madness, the right to worship or not to worship. All protected by the boys from somewhere else who you spit at, who you sneer at, who you mock. They're the reason you're alive. And the reason they're dying is because of your sins. The verminous left, the Larry Flint left, as now adopted by the Democrat Party itself, the Larry Flint left is now the official party platform of the Democrat Party. I'm not fooling you. Everything that Larry Flint and his ilk stood for in the 60s and 70s has been adopted, if not overtly, then covertly, by the Democrat Party. They have accepted this debased, destroyed West, social West. They would not only have accepted it as the norm, they welcome it. It's the Marxist dream, the death of the family, the death of heterosexuality. Everything that the left dreamed of has come to pass in this country. Hit hardest the black people. 70% of black children are born out of wedlock. The American left celebrate this. Celebrate this as a sign of liberation, that they have been liberated from the binds of bourgeois marriage. The Muslims saying, hell no, we won't go. You're not going to pollute our children. You're not going to turn our children into Jezebels. You're not going to turn our daughters into whores and our sons into homosexuals. We're not going to let you do it. We'll kill you before you do it. You're not turning our sons into little homosexuals. You're not going to brainwash our children. We will send them to Muslim schools. You're not going to turn our daughters into whores. We'll send them to Muslim schools. We're not going to let our daughters dress like Britney Spears. We're not going to let them behave like Paris Hilton. We don't like them. We think they're vermin. We think they're garbage. We don't care that they're held up as role models. We detest them. We hate them. We think that they're the most disgusting human beings on the planet. We'll not send our children. We won't even go to the movies. We won't turn on the television set. Incidentally, the Orthodox Jews have the very same view. So the American left, which is able to get away with these behaviors and sell these behaviors, is protected by the very, let us say, Christian right that they detest and sneer at in their F-16s, in their tanks, and behind their machine guns, if you wanted to put it in that crude sense. And, of course, they continue to not recognize that they have brought about Islam's rage. No, it's not Israel, per se, that the Muslims really care about. It's not territory. It's not land. That's what the left will tell you, that the Jews stole the land of the Muslims. That's the simple, archaic notion of the American left. It's that Israel's left-wing social premise and left-wing social freedoms that threaten Islam in the Middle East. They don't want it spreading. They don't want a homosexual parade down the streets of Damascus. They don't want a gay rights parade in Tehran. They don't want boys tongue-kissing each other in their nation's capitals. They'd rather die than let that happen. So they say death to Israel. They don't really know what Israel is. Israel's an idea. It's not that their grandfather's olive grove was taken. It's that their grandfather's purity was stolen by the infection of the West's social mores. And they don't want them in their villages. They don't want them in their homes. They don't want them on Al Jazeera. And they're not going to let you do it to them. No matter what the madmen who run these media empires may think, Islam will never tolerate the sewer pipe that comes out of New York City and the sewer pipe that comes out of Hollywood's sewer factories will never penetrate the Muslim world, nor should they. But that's what's provoking Muslim rage. It's not so much what the Pope said. It's what Larry Flint did by hijacking the Supreme Court, in my opinion. And every other left-wing civil libertarian lawyer in America who every day goes about his business of destroying the Christian mores, the Judeo-Christian mores of this country with glee. What fun they're having, the boys from NYU. The bright boys from Columbia and NYU and Harvard Law and Bolt Law School, all of the lowest places on earth where they teach you how to defeat the other man without firing a shot, without cutting his throat. You can actually cut his throat. The lawyer learns to commit jihad without firing a shot. And he learns it at NYU, Columbia Law, Harvard Law, how to commit jihad without firing a shot, how to decapitate the enemy without picking up a rusty knife. Who was it who said that give him a fountain pen instead of a gun and he can steal more money? Well, those were the old days. Just give him a judge that he owns. Not all judges, of course, can be owned. Some of them are very reputable and great men. In fact, they're greater today, the honest ones, than they ever were, given the climate of the times and the lack of money that they actually, the poor amount of money that they make. My hat's off to the honest judges, and I've met a few in my life. They are the true heroes. They're like the social workers of the legal profession, the far and few between.
Savage.
I woke up last night at about 4 a.m. I couldn't sleep. I heard a rumbling in the sky, and I know what that low rumbling in the sky means. I know that the gigantic bombers are on the move. They're coming out of the Air Force Base near Sacramento. I didn't have to read about it in the paper today. I just know they're moving them. I don't know where they're moving them. I don't know how many were being moved, but I heard the low rumble in the sky at 4 a.m. And I said, thank God something's going on behind the scenes because this is getting out of control. You've got a psychopath threatening New York and Washington, D.C. You've got an invisible president. You've got a quavering secretary of defense. You've got a secretary of state that went over to the Palestinian side, meaning the PLO side. It's astonishing to me what a group of hollow men we have running this country. And then I couldn't sleep. I couldn't get back to sleep after I heard that low rumble because things are very terrifying right now if you really listen carefully. You don't have to put your ear to the ground to know what's going on in this world. All you got to do is take your blinders off and stop watching baseball and get your eyes off YouTube and get your eyes off pornography and get your eyes off, you know, the latest lingerie on YouTube. Stop listening to Moloch's madnesses and start looking at what's going on in your world. And I sat down and I wrote this. Take it for what it is. I wrote this down. I said, I met with my kitchen cabinet last night while cooking a light dinner. As I drank the Bordeaux, I consulted with my chief advisor, Teddy, a 10-pound gray poodle. In my kitchen cabinet with us were Plato, Moses, Jesus, John Locke, George Washington, Lincoln, Patton, and God. Here's what my kitchen cabinet recommended for rescuing America. I wrote out a 4-page plan. You think I'm just a funny guy, huh? Let's start with my plan for rescuing America. Page 1, domestic, A. Cut federal income taxes by 2% per year over 4 years for a minimum total of 8% over 4 years. B, reduce federal government departments in size by 4% each year for a total reduction of size by 16% over 4 years. C, eliminate all public assistance for able-bodied recipients. Cut off all public assistance for immigrants for 5 years. Repatriate those who are not working after 2 years. D, immediately impose tariffs on cars and trucks owned by foreign entities, even if they're manufactured in America. E, cause illegal aliens to build a wall between the United States and Mexico and then repatriate them. Pay them a one-time worker fee. F, increase pay for active duty combat troops by 10%. Number 2, fire any unmarried military person becoming pregnant while on active duty. Shall I continue? I will, whether you want me to or not. Here's the rest of my domestic policy for saving or rescuing America. G, make abortions illegal except when the physical survival of the mother is threatened, to be determined by 3 medical doctors. Number 2 in that category, require a NORPLAN for all women on welfare of childbearing age. H, close all houses of sex and massage. I, expand the DEA while decriminalizing most drugs. J, regarding the media. One, eliminate all foreign ownership of any American media entity. Two, break up overly large conglomerates like News Corporation. K, encourage childbearing among tax-paying citizens. Create a marriage incentive through lower taxes for married heterosexual couples and a government subsidy for each child conceived and carried to birth. Increase the subsidies for each year the couple remains married. L, repatriate all illegal immigrants now incarcerated. Encourage all other illegals to self-repatriate through double taxation on wages and fines on employers. This is Michael Savage. I'll go on with my international program for Rescuing America. I'm sure that most of you would turn the program off. You'd rather listen to the hollow men in the media. Go ahead and listen. I don't care anymore. We've got a hollow, empty suit running the country. We've got a hollow, empty skirt wanting to run the country. And the only people who can save this country have been silenced by the media bosses. So I'll go on with my international plan for rescuing this great nation. International, A, Iraq. It'll be Iraq, Iran, North Korea, Israel, China, the United Nations. Here it comes, A, Iraq. One, cordon off the Sunni triangle. Give the people 72 hours to leave. Reduce the entire sector to rubble with an aerial campaign. Send in Iraqi troops to mop up pockets of resistance. Emphasis, Iraqi troops to mop up pockets of resistance. Two, divide Iraq into 3 to 4 sectors, Sunni, Shiite, Kurd, and international. Next, remove all U.S. troops after above achieved. B, Iran. One, sanctions, embargoes, and mine their harbors. Nothing goes in, nothing comes out. C, North Korea. Destroy their launching platforms. Impose a naval blockade on all goods coming in or out except food. D, Israel, Arab entities. Give Israel 4 years to become self-sufficient. Cut off all foreign aid to all nations. E, China, 20% tariffs on all China-made goods immediately, rising by 5% each year for each year China refuses to revalue the currency. F, United Nations, withdraw immediately, remove all diplomats and staff, convert the United Nations building into housing for the working poor. G, Mexico, force Mexico to pay one barrel of oil for every illegal alien in the United States of America per month. I'm Michael Savage. I approve of this message.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of the Michael Savage Show.
Savage.